Coalition! Coalition! A coalition of lies, ripped and ripped tiles, Tory school ties. Coalition! Coalition! You make sure laws are lax for your bankable friends who pay no tax. Coalition. Coalition. Yet you still demand more from the needy and the poor. Coalition. Coalition. Freeze aspirational dreams and pay. Fritter our pensions away. Coalition. Coalition.
Yes, Hound of the Vulnerables, Coalition, kicking off this week's broadcast of Radio Resistance Chesterfield. And if you're like me, a working class listener, well, what cheer have we got from the budget this year? Well, if you're a worker, you're not going to gain any more in your pay packet. The rich aren't going to be taxed anymore. You're going to suffer cuts, but hey, lighten up. You can always drink to forget your sorrows and play some bingo in the hope of gaining some money. What a patronising bunch. Anyway, back to the music with the sound of Arcade Fire. Track entitled Supersymmetry from their Reflector album, as reviewed a few months ago in Socialist Worker.
I know you're living in my mind. It's not the same as being alive. I know you're living in my mind. It's not the same as being alive. Supersymmetry. If telling the truth is not polite, then I guess we'll have to fight. If telling the truth is not polite, then I guess we'll have to fight. Supersymmetry. Supersymmetry.
Yeah, the sound of Arcade Fire there, track entitled Super Symmetry. Now, all will become clearer after this next report why that's perhaps a appropriately named track for the situation in Crimea. Now, my report on crime here is basically going to be a few excerpts from the latest Socialist Workers, latest Socialist Worker article on the subject. Crimea has joined the Russian Federation as the Ukrainian crisis continues to be a fault line for the major powers. The outcome of a referendum in Crimea last weekend was a foregone conclusion. With the minority Tatar population boycotting it, the majority voted to join Russia. They were confirming the existing reality with Russian troops on the ground. David Cameron insisted there had been a clear, predictable and firm response from the West to Russia's actions. The US and the European Union issued lists of Russians and Ukrainians connected with the Crimean crisis, whose Western assets are to be frozen. In reality, the sanctions are not that much of a sign of strength. Russian President Putin signed a decree recognising Crimea as a sovereign and independent country anyway. After the fall of the Yanukovych government, Ukraine shifted towards the West. As US strategic right-wing think tank Stratfor described it, for Russia, intervention in Crimea was a low-risk, low-cost action. It made Russia appear as a bully in the West and a victor at home. That was precisely the image it wanted to project to compensate for its defeat. Meanwhile, the underlying moves are towards stalemate. For instance, at the same time as the sanctions were imposed, Russia offered talks to resolve the dispute. But it is a far from stable stalemate. The Russian army is encircling Ukraine's borders. The Ukrainian government has called up its reservists. Nationalist demonstrations could easily escalate into violence and then be used to justify intervention. Ordinary Ukrainian people gain nothing from Russian intervention or from further expansion of US and European Union influence. Well, I couldn't have put it better myself. The situation there is certainly changing very rapidly, and it is kind of hard to keep up with things. But even so, what seems to be a constant is Western hypocrisy towards it all. For more details of the Crimea situation, you could watch the Bourgeois News channels, but rather better would be for you to buy your copy of Socialist Worker or read online at www.socialistworker.co.uk. As for David Cameron, he can ruddy well shut up about the situation in Crimea, because there is a certain situation very similar, pretty closer to home. I mean, Ireland was partitioned between Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland in 1921 under the terms of Lloyd George's Government of Ireland Act 1920. This, by the way, is from Wikipedia. During the Anglo-Irish War between Irish Republican and British forces. At the conclusion of that war on the 6th of December 1922, under the terms of the resulting treaty, Northern Ireland provisionally became an autonomous part of the newly independent Irish Free State, with the right to opt out of it. Sounds a bit familiar. It promptly exercised this right. That's due to the high percentage of Protestant Unionists there, and left the Free State 2 days later. So, David Cameron, before you start hectoring Russia about the situation in Ukraine and Crimea, maybe you should take a little hint from Paul McCartney and Wings. Give Ireland back to the Irish.
Don't make them have to take it away.
This is Radio Resistance News, brought to you courtesy of Socialist Worker Newspaper. Tory Chancellor George Osborne is waging war on working class people. He claims he has no choice but to slash our jobs, services, pay and pensions. But it's all lies. Just this week, Barclays bankers handed themselves 32 million quid in shares. The five richest families in Britain have more wealth than the poorest fifth of the population. There's plenty of money in Britain, but the rich are grabbing more and more of it. It's time we took it back. The police repeatedly tried to recruit informers to disrupt the campaign of anti-fascists in Cambridge. They told one activist she would be arrested if she told anyone what the cops were up to. The allegations come after Home Secretary Theresa May announced an inquiry into undercover infiltration. Around 150 porters, domestic, catering and help desk workers began a 7-day strike at Ealing Hospital. Outsourcing bosses at Compass Medirest pay them just £6.31 an hour. It's really hard work we do, and we don't get paid if we get sick, said striker Sunita. A referendum in Crimea has confirmed the reality of Russian troops on the ground. Western sanctions appear ineffective, and bankers are worried after US aid to Kiev was delayed. One said, "We are seeing East against West. Ukraine is just a pawn here." Also in this week's Socialist Worker, nurses are furious and could go on strike against their effective pay cut after MPs got an automatic 11% pay rise. Teachers are set to walk out on Wednesday 26th of March across the country in a national strike. Why we must resist the media and politicians' poisonous racism and join the March 22nd anti-racism demo in London. An obituary to Tony Benn. An analysis of UKIP, who they are and what they stand for. And a review of the film Under the Skin. You can read Socialist Worker online at www.socialistworker.co.uk. That's www.socialistworker.co.uk. You can buy your copy most Saturdays in Chesterfield Town Centre outside Primark between 11 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. You can pick up your copy from our branch meetings on Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. in the Assembly Rooms in the centre of Chesterfield. Or to get your copy of Socialist Worker delivered, contact SWP Chesterfield at tesco.net. That's SWP Chesterfield at tesco.net. Socialist Worker is your paper. Buy it, read it, Sell it.
Tell me where are you coming from? And more importantly, where have you been? Tell me where are you coming from? And more importantly, where have you been? I was out demonstrating, demanding my rights. Were you? They told me to shut up and be more polite. Were you there? Were you there? Were you there? Were you there when we fought for a change in the law, for equality, justice and rights? Were you there when we voted for action and blocking the streets? Were you there? Were you there? Were you there? Tell me where are you coming from? And more importantly, where have you been? Tell me where are you coming from? And more importantly, where have you been? Were you there when we shouted, it's not tokens we want, or your patronage? Were you there, my friend liberal, too embarrassed to speak? But you've learnt all the right words, I'm sure. Were you there when we needed you on the right side? Were you there when we wanted you then? Are you waiting a while just to jump on our wagon? Till it's comfortable, popular, smart. Some news for all freeloading radicals. Tomorrow just might be too late. You've been there now. There's cosmetic change and paint in the cracks just won't do. We want real change and now. Tell me where are you coming from? But more
Sound of Tragic Mike, My Friend Liberal. And next up, teachers are set to walk out on Wednesday the 26th of March across the country in a national strike. Now, the Socialist Worker is the only paper which reports strikes without having a go at the strikers and treating seriously the issues of what caused the strike in the first place. As the Socialist Worker reports this week, NUT union members are taking on hated Education Secretary Michael Gove and his attacks on pay, pensions and conditions. Ruth Levy is Divisional Secretary of Hertfordshire NUT. She told Socialist Worker, "A lot of teachers are leaving, especially younger ones. They're working all day Saturday and Sunday and they can't cope with it. They can't have a family life." Lisa Tunnell, an NUT rep and president of Sheffield NUT, says, "A lot of younger teachers say they can't see how they can carry on in the job. Some teachers worry about striking because they want to be teaching their children. But if we don't fight back, things aren't going to get any better. And if we don't fight now, what will education be like for children next year or the year after that?" Well said. Now, Gove has suffered a series of setbacks recently. The school teachers' review body failed to recommend any of the attacks he wants to drive through, and his free schools programme is lurching from crisis to crisis. So Gove isn't invincible, and a serious programme of strikes can beat him. Now, there will be strikes, like I say, on the 26th of March across the UK, including the Chesterfield area. The strikes will be most solid locally among primary schools, which have the highest NUT membership, because although previous regional strikes had involved both the NUT and NASUWT unions, the NASUWT has backed off from further action, citing talks with Gove as its reason. Even so, one school where the strike is likely to be especially solid locally is Newbold School, which fairly recently became an academy, and there's already an ongoing dispute there over bullying. And speaking of teachers, this next track's going out to Richard Dillon, if you're listening. I know you like Judy Dunlop. Well, she's up now with a recording made at Born in 84 entitled Jean Gordon.
I was particularly touched because of the content matter, because of the lady that it talks about. But I'm a Borders girl, and it's set in the Borders. And the woman is... she was the queen of the gypsies. Her husband was the king of the gypsies. And she had a very tough time of it when all her sons went wrong. Three of them were hung on the same day. Her husband was banished, and so she was left destitute. We're talking about 1760. So, it does sound like 1984, and of course it's happening to people, all women and men all over the world right now. So this is all about Jean Gordon, and I said I was from the Borders. It mentions the River Eden, and she meets her end in the River Eden, which is one of the rivers that runs through Carlisle, which is my hometown. Although Chesterfield's my hometown now because I've been here so long. But I'm originally from Carlisle. So, and her love of Bonnie Prince Charlie was her undoing. She was a great one for Home Rule for Scotland, so it's very current really, isn't it, with what's going through Parliament at the moment.
Oh,
Yes, Hound There of Judy Dunlop, recorded live at Bourne in 84. Gene Gordon. And it's not just the teachers who are going on strike. Health unions threatened industrial action last week when the government refused to pay a promised pay rise for nurses. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt said it would be unaffordable. Less than a half of all health workers will now receive the promised 1% increase. It is being treated as an additional payment rather than an actual pay rise. This is a further squeeze on workers, which means the increase can't be included in pension or future percentage pay calculations. Even the 1% represents a pay cut in real terms. Inflation is running at 2%, even by the government's favoured measure, the Consumer Price Index. In other words, it's probably a damn sight more than that in real life. Everyone who receives incremental pay, which rises annually as workers gain skills and experience, will not even receive this 1%. It will effectively be a pay freeze for me, Anne, a nurse in this category, told Socialist Worker. Chancellor George Osborne wants to spin the story that Tory cuts and austerity have brought the economy back to recovery, but talk of recovery is an insult to the hundreds of thousands of NHS workers who struggle to get by on low pay. Now, as if this wasn't bad enough, Hunt claimed that even paying the measly 1% rise across the board would mean sacking 6,000 nurses. Yet in Scotland, health workers will receive the 1% with no loss of jobs. But why should it be a choice between sacking workers or paying them a decent wage? When the MPs were awarded an automatic pay rise last year of a whopping 11% in 2015, there was no talk of it being unaffordable. No government ministers said that some MPs might face the sack to pay for it. More's the pity. The unison union calculates that its average health worker member now earns 16% less in real terms than in 2010. Rachel Maskell of the Unite Union said the pay deal was the final straw that breaks the camel's back, a step too far. Unison represents more than 400,000 NHS workers, and Unite members make up a further 100,000. Action from these unions would hit the Tories hard. Health unions have called protests on Budget Day, Wednesday of this week. But this needs to be just the start of a real fight against the Tory austerity that is hitting millions of workers hard. So there you have it. Again, this is extracts from this week's Socialist Worker, which can be read in more detail in the paper or online. And meanwhile, in the private sector, Doncaster care workers were set to begin their second 7-day strike on Wednesday of this week over attacks on evening and weekend wages. The Unison Union members are employed by Care UK. The firm took over the previously public care service for more than 130 people with learning disabilities last September. The new strike announcement follows a unanimous vote for more action at the end of the last strike and after a pathetic offer from Care UK bosses. So there you have it. Now, if the Care UK workers and other former NHS workers who have seen their jobs privatised could strike together with the NHS workers, we could totally sink the NHS cuts, pay freezes and privatisation agenda, and hopefully sink this rotten government while we're at it. Anyway, back to the music, again recorded live at Born in 84, that's last Saturday's event at the Winding Wheel to commemorate the 1984-1985 miners' strike. This next track's from Flaming Nerve.
Like I said, there are...
Track entitled Call Me Alice.
Food kitchens, a massive struggle for our coal industry and our mining communities. And then today, the food banks, another massive struggle in the face of austerity measures and crippling welfare cuts. It's not crippling welfare cuts, is it? it's fundamental welfare reforms. There's one big difference, huge difference between then and now. Back then, it did feel what it was, like the government were waging a war against the union, against the mining communities. And at least now, we can take comfort from the fact that we're all in it together. Are you not comforted? Of course, we have to admit it. And they haven't a clue. And how could they have a clue? Wouldn't think about where they come from. But they are very, very good at some things. They're very good at the language, and I mentioned that. Very, very good indeed. And they're dangerously good at the blame game. Towards the end of last year, I was listening to Farming Today, as you do when you get older and you can't sleep. Looking forward to Tweet of the Day. And the Badgical have been brought to an abrupt close prematurely because, well, basically, they couldn't kill enough badgers to make it work. And everybody had kind of told them this beforehand, so many people. But Owen Paterson, in his wisdom, had agreed to it, and he was being interviewed. No, there was nothing wrong with the strategy whatsoever, that was sound, and no, it wasn't to do with his judgment. It was the reason why the call failed was, quote, The badgers move the goalposts. You can see them, can't you, coming out of the set. Cue a song.
Hey!
Yes, Hound Thou Flaming Nerve, Call Me Alice. Well, I thought that I'd slid into follow the rabbit into Wonderland when I saw that ULU, that's the University of London Union, had issued a statement regarding the SWP and Marxism, which seems to consist largely of vile slander against the SWP. Well, the SWP have since issued a statement in which basically puts the facts right, and it's only fair that I read it out now. A number of officers of the University of London Union, ULU, have produced a statement regarding the SWP and the annual Marxism event. The statement makes a number of untrue claims about the SWP. First, it is claimed that the SWP is a corrupt rape apologist organisation which prides itself in creating an unsafe space for young women. We rebut these extremely serious but unsubstantiated allegations. They are abhorrent lies. Had those drafting the statement taken the opportunity to consult any of the young women members in the SWP, including those who are members of student unions affiliated to ULU, they would know this to be far from the case. We oppose any manifestation of sexism and have campaigned vociferously on this matter for decades. Second, the statement claims that those who came to Marxism 2013 to protest against the SWP were submitted to verbal and physical abuse by members of the party. We are not aware of any abuse directed towards anyone protesting against our event last summer. No such complaints were made to the organisers of the Marxism event, and we have not been made aware of any received by the venues or any other authority. We would not countenance such actions. Indeed, if an alleged in the statement violence was perpetrated against people, we invite those who have signed the statement to substantiate their claim so that we can investigate this serious allegation. Third, the statement alleges that the Socialist Workers' Party has tried to silence any activist within the party who has tried to fight for justice for the women who have been victims of sexual violence at the hands of the leadership. In addition, it is claimed that criticism of the SWP leadership has been constantly silenced and suppressed at every turn and often met with violent behaviour. We completely refute these allegations. We assume these accusations relate to the two serious allegations made against a former member of the SWP who was, at the time of the alleged incidents, on the leadership. We sought to address these through our internal disputes procedures. Subsequently, we acknowledged that there were problems with some of the structures of our disputes procedures. So in spring 2013, we began a thoroughgoing review to ensure we put in place procedures adequate to deal with such allegations. These were voted on and accepted at our December 2013 conference. A full report is available online. The leadership of the SWP has also said sorry to the two women for the suffering caused to them by the structural flaws in our disputes procedures, the way in which the two cases became subject to political conflict within the party and slurs on the internet. Both these facts have been reported in our publications and on our website. Far from dissent being silenced in the party, there was extensive debate and three national conferences were held in 2013. The allegation of violence being used to silence and that suppressed criticism of the SWP leadership is another unsubstantiated lie. Finally, we note that a national meeting of SWP members recently took place in Yulu on 2nd of March 2014. Indeed, the SWP often books rooms in Yulu. We cannot fathom why, if those who have signed the statement really do have oversight of the bookings at Yulu, and they really do believe their allegations against us, they were prepared to accept this booking, but have now made such a public statement regarding the Marxism 2014 event. Our only conclusion is that this is a malicious attempt to smear the SWP by publishing vicious but unsubstantiated lies about the organisation. Well said. We really don't need all of this shit. What we need, not just in the SWP, but across the left and across the whole working class, is an end to all of this factional infighting, and for us all to join together and fight against not just the government, but the capitalist system that's pissing on us, and stop trying to rip each other to pieces. And if you want a bit of good politics, well, next up, here's the Thief Action.
They try to use me. The bourgeoisie abuse me. Won't confuse me, 'cause I've been infused by some good politics. Ain't you glad they wrote it? Ain't you glad you can read it? Now we can't be defeated, 'cause we've been treated to some good politics. Ain't no use complaining. They try and tame me. The Tories try and blame my class. I know what they say can last. We live fast, some good politics. Ain't you glad about the good politics? Ain't you glad about the good politics? Ain't you glad about the good politics?
Yeah, the sound of the Thief Action, good politics. And this Thursday, just gone, the Chesterfield branch of the Socialist Workers' Party had its meeting on Tony Benn, who very recently passed over to the next life. And whether you agree or disagree, he has been a leading statesman for a very long time, and Tony was for a while a member of the Privy Council. I was very interested to find out. Now, there are a number of myths about Tony Benn which are being put forward to this day by the media. For one thing, he supposedly kept the Tories in power for so long by being divisive, according to Claire Short. And the same accusation of being divisive was interestingly also levelled at Bob Crowe when he died not so long beforehand. Indeed, it seems that any oppositional voice to the capitalist system is nowadays being labelled as divisive by the system. Another myth about Tony Benn was that he was harmless. Well, if the establishment consider it to be harmless, then why do they continue to this day trying to destroy everything that he stood for? Now, the truth about Tony Benn was that he saw how bourgeois democracy tried to smother any oppositional opinion, which is why in 2001 he left Parliament to concentrate more on politics. The obituaries about Tony Benn seem to mostly concentrate on his activities within Stop the War and the Iraq demos. Indeed, Tony was one of the few who was on the right side, and at the end of the day, although the demos against the Iraq War didn't stop the 2003 Iraq War happening, they did have a knock-on effect in that they must have stopped Britain going to war with Syria, as politicians realised that there was really no appetite for war, and that if they had gone to war with Syria, they'd have had such demos to put up with all over again, probably even bigger. Now, in the early 1980s, Benn was the figurehead of what became known as the Bennite movement, which was basically an opposition to what Thatcher was trying to do at the time. And the trade union movement did call mass demos against unemployment, and on the back of all this, Benn stood for the Labour leadership, and he got a very respectable 49.5% of the vote, only just defeated to the leadership. Now, previously, from 1974 to 1979, there was a disastrous Labour government, and Thatcher ended up winning on the back of a demoralised working class. And the trade union movement, quite rightfully, decided never again would there be such a Labour government. So, for the first time in over a decade, trade unions had started becoming politically rather than purely industrially active. Now, the socialist worker at the time criticised the Bennite movement, saying that it was built on sand and had to connect with workers' strikes and struggles to really achieve anything. Indeed, Benn was relying in the end on the leadership of a few big unions to vote for him to become the Labour leader, but many of these trade union bureaucrats ended up ditching Benn over something called the Bishop-Stortford Agreement, and no, I don't know 100% what that was, I'll have to look into it. Anyway, Marx said that when people have the possibility of struggle, ideas begin to change. And when ideas begin to change, workers realise they themselves have the power to change things. So they look less to getting MPs elected, less to their bureaucrats taking a lead, etc. So, what's needed should be a Marxist movement which should be active outside Parliament and within the workplaces. On the other hand, Labourism says that workers' activity should be subordinated to getting the so-called right people elected into Parliament. Now, in the end, Benn realised the role of MI5, the feds, the top civil servants, in resisting any positive change which could be brought by Parliament. An example of this was in 1970s. in the 1970s rather, with respect to Northern Ireland, when army generals told the Labour government that they would not act on Parliament's orders. Proof that the real power does not lie in Parliament. And a lot of people see the Queen as basically nothing more than a harmless figurehead. Well, did you know that in 1975, the Queen dissolved a democratically elected government in Australia due to its radical reforms, and could quite easily do the same to any future British government? Now Ben recognised all this and stood side by side with the activists who fought against the system, which is probably why the establishment never forgave him. And the argument continues even now between revolution and reformism. How do we get rid of the capitalist system and replace it with something better? Then, in the contributions from the floor, there were a number praising Tony Benn, saying how he could personally engage with people and their problems, how he never lost his feelings for the people who had elected him and who he'd been elected to represent. But he remained very loyal to the Labour Party, and he said that people should stay within the Labour Party to try to turn it back to its traditional left-wing values. Tony was also a committed anti-racist. Indeed, on the first A&L carnival, he was telling people that this was the sort of mass movement that we needed to challenge racism. However, he was the exception that proves the rule, in that he was someone who began as an institutionalised politician within the system, who ended up becoming an idealist. Normally, it's the other way round. Idealists get sucked into the system and become institutionalised. And Ben moved to the left due to the experience of mass struggles in the 1970s. Indeed, a few things were brought up of his earlier mistakes. For example, earlier on in his career, he was a supporter of nuclear power. And also in 1967, he brought in the hated Marine Offences Act, which criminalised offshore free radio. But, like I say, he did move pretty drastically to the left, not just in the 70s, but from the 70s onwards. And he's stood on our side regarding being anti-war, and also regarding Northern Ireland. He's always been on the Republican side. So, in the summing up, in the conclusion, apparently sometime in the future we may well get another Tony Benn-like figure one day, but it'll be in very different circumstances, and how will we relate to such an individual? I mean, such individuals as Tony Benn are very principled, very good people, but their political viewpoint can sort of lead them down perhaps dead ends sometimes. Even so, when Ben died, we lost a generational voice who could articulate a viewpoint in opposition to capitalism, and he will be very, very sadly missed. Anyway, back to the music, but next up we've got Attila the Stockbroker, and as well as doing music, he does of course do poetry, and this next track is a reggae poem which he's reading out a cappella. It's based on the hideous adverts promoting the privatisation of British Gas in the 1980s. This one's Tell Sid.
Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy better buy one or two. Because she's getting very old and it's getting very cold and she doesn't know just what she's going to do. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy better buy one today. because her gas bill's come and her feet are going now and she doesn't know just how she's going to pay. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy better buy her three or four. Because all she wants to do is cry, all she wants to do is die when she hears the baby banging on the door. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy better hang his head in shame. A mother and a wife who works hard all her life, now she's cold and alone and sits to blame for regeneration of this greed-ravaged nation. We need renationalisation without compensation. For regeneration of this greed-ravaged nation, we need renationalisation without compensation. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy better buy a five or six, because he shouldn't use his brain or be conned yet again by the Tories and their privatising tricks. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper, because she pays the price for what he did when he joined the greedy mass who bought shares in British Gas, sold our heritage to make themselves a quid. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy better buy a seven or eight. He's a scared little mouse in his cosy little house as he sees the anger turning into hate. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy he should have thought of that before. Because when the poor find their voice, there will be a stark choice, civil society or civil war. For regeneration of this greed-ravaged nation, we need renationalisation without compensation. And if the bankers press wail, occupy the Daily Mail and shut down the sun, let justice be done. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper. Tell Siddy better buy a 9 or 10. But he did what he was told when Royal Mail was sold and he went and bought a load of shares again. Tell Siddy better buy his mum a jumper, because it really is about time that he did. But he's so busy, dear. Visits three times a year. So if she dies cold and alone, tell Siddy.
This is the Radio Resistance Red Guide, a guide to demos, meetings and events of interest to left-wingers in the Chesterfield area. On Saturday, March the 22nd, that's tomorrow, there'll be the big rally and demonstration in central London, Stand Up to Racism and Fascism, marking UN Anti-Racism Day, supported by the TUC, UAF, various trade unions and the Muslim Council of Britain. Transport leaves from Chesterfield by coach outside the town hall at 7 a.m. Price is £10 for a ticket, or £5 if you're on wage. Should be one hell of a day. On Thursday, March the 27th, Chesterfield branch of the Socialist Workers' Party has its branch meeting on A Rebel's Guide to Rosa Luxemburg. This will be held at 7:30 p.m. at the Assembly Rooms in Chesterfield Market Halls. Then on Thursday, April the 10th, Chesterfield SWP's branch meeting will be on The Miners' Strike, When the State Went to War with Workers, with guest speaker Judith Orr, the editor of Socialist Worker, again at the Assembly Rooms at Chesterfield Market Halls, again at 7:30 p.m. On Thursday, May the 1st, Standing in Line is a performance in poetry and song of a local story from World War One, with Lester Simpson and Blaze, at 7 p.m. at Chesterfield Library. Then on Monday, May the 5th, it's May Day and time for the Chesterfield TUC May Day People's Gala and Demonstration in Chesterfield Town Centre. speakers include Matt Rack from the FBU, Chesterfield Labour MP Toby Perkins, and speakers from the RMT and the Democratic Women's Movement of Portugal, plus live music, a wide range of stalls, and more. Last but not least, from Thursday the 10th of July through till Monday the 14th of July in central London, it's Marxism 2014. For more info and to book your tickets online, visit www.marxismfestival.org.uk. That's www.marxismfestival.org.uk. So come along, enjoy yourself, and don't listen to the haters. Remember, what the working class needs a party which will not sell out to a right-wing agenda to gain middle-class votes. What the working class needs a party which will not kowtow to the bosses and the ruling class. What the working class needs a party which is run by and for the working class. The Socialist Workers' Party is that party.
Radio Resistance Chesterfield.
Sung the songs of Safka, candles in the rain. But the air is so much thinner now, and all that's left a single flame. Man was held in rapture by fool's golden fame, and from then on ever after, the power fell to who could pay. I cannot say, I will not speak. I cannot say, I will not speak. Sung the songs of Zimmerman, how the times were gonna change. But the chimes of freedom, they never rung, and the answer in the wind never came. I cannot say, I will not speak. I cannot wait for them to see a single flame set greed ablaze and send them running to the sea. I am vexed by dreams of freedom and of peace. But each day I wake to that single flame. When shall we be released? I cannot say, I will not speak. I cannot for them to see a single flame set greed ablaze, send them rolling to the sea.
Sound there of Lucy Ward, I Cannot Say, I Will Not Speak. And now I'd like to talk about immigration controls and why we oppose them. Well, immigration controls, although they seem to be very difficult to oppose because of all of the media hype regarding immigration, the fact is that immigration controls exist to police working class people and spread racist division. They are a tool of our real enemies, the bosses and the state. And creating a system of raids, detention centres and deportation that hangs over migrants makes it easier for bosses to pay those workers less and drive everyone's wages down. Indeed, the existence of immigration controls also legitimises a very wrong and dangerous idea that workers have to compete with each other for a limited set of resources. Yet there's no fixed number of jobs, homes or services to go round. At the end of the day, it's workers who create wealth, and workers' struggle can put that wealth in the hands of ordinary people. Now, politicians talk as if migrants put pressure on services that they contribute to more than they use in practice. For example, the NHS would effectively stop working if it wasn't for immigrants. And also, the establishment lays the claim that migrants are responsible for taking jobs, when the fact of the matter is that it's the bosses who lay people off, not immigrants. And one recurring refrain is that Britain is nearly full up. A bit of a bizarre claim to make for a country where golf courses take up as much land as housing. And millionaires are also allowed to buy visas, so at the end of the day, they don't have to worry about immigration controls. There's one rule for the rich and another for the poor when it comes to immigration. And like I say, it's bosses who drive down wages, not migrant workers. Indeed, migrant workers from Africa and South America, such as the cleaners at the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, have been at the heart of the living wage strikes and protests in recent years to try and push pay up. Immigration controls that target these workers and divide them from their British-born colleagues would only help the bosses to keep pushing pay down. Now, immigration controls do have a bit of a history. During the Industrial Revolution, Britain's booming cities sucked in workers from around the world. The British ruling class didn't introduce any controls then because they needed a growing supply of labour. But the first peacetime immigration controls came in 1905 during an economic crisis and in response to a wave of strikes often led by immigrant workers. So there you have it. And the Aliens Act, as it was called, particularly targeted Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe and institutionalised the idea that they were to blame for other workers' problems. Now, the Act put restrictions on ordinary people, but not on bosses, and it didn't just stop many people coming to Britain, it also brought discrimination and racism to the many who were already here. And then when Britain boomed again in the 1950s, politicians went to great lengths to recruit workers from its former colonies, notably the West Indies. And as the boom slowed down in the 1960s, even though more people at the time left Britain than entered Britain, politicians still began calling for immigration controls and even forced repatriation. Now, the controls were racist, and socialist worker quite rightly opposes all immigration controls. because the boss has used immigration controls to try and stop workers' unity. Workers born in different countries have the same interests, and united they can fight for those interests, and we should all unite and fight together. Black and white, unite and fight. That's why we need you. Whether you're British, whether you're an immigrant, whether you're black or white, gay or straight, man or woman, young or old, we need you on the Say No to Racism march tomorrow. That's Saturday the 22nd of March in London. The coach will be leaving Chesterfield Town Hall at 7 a.m. Tickets are £10 or £5 if you're unwaged. And back to the music. This is from the They Get Free Mobiles, Don't They? A show by the Banner Theatre Company about immigration and the public perception thereof. This track's entitled Two Worlds.
From the great Zambezi River to the back streets of Bulawayo, from the great Wamamba Mountains to the mansions of barren green, you stately Shona farmers, you proud Nabili herdsmen, you have your homeland.
The liberation struggle had already started, you know, black people are fighting against the white occupation, and for my mother to have had a child with a white man was like the ultimate sin, really, or I was that badge of shame.
Fish swim in the river, birds nest in mosasa trees, dogs lie in the dusty street.
About my conception, I wasn't told. I mean, was my mother raped? You know, I mean, she'd get so upset when I asked her.
You are the white man's reject, some black mother's cast off. You don't fit the color code. No place for you.
Only registered in 1977. I didn't exist before that. And I mean, that's when I was given the name Nelly. Brown was the surname I used then before I found my father. And that's a very common name amongst mixed race people. Brown, orange, yellow, green. I mean, whatever the registrar was wearing that day, brown trousers, you became brown. You can understand how the black people must have felt towards white people. But I mean, caught up in all this, I was just a child and I didn't know any different, you know. And I mean, for my kids, I just would like them to have a normal.
Yeah, to world there from the Banner Theatre Company. Well, that's about all we've got time for this week from Radio Resistance Chesterfield. So over to you. If you've got a event which you'd like to promote or a coming industrial action you'd like us to mention, if you'd like to give your views on anything said on Radio Resistance Chesterfield or on a political issue in general, if you'd like to request a song or dedicate a song to someone, well, you can contact us by email at radioresistancechesterfield@yahoo.co.uk. That's radioresistancechesterfield@yahoo.co.uk. Or you can phone or text us on 0793 479 3041. That's 0793 479 3041. Or search for Radio Resistance Chesterfield within Facebook, like our page and leave us a message on the wall, or send us a message via Facebook. The choice is yours. And if you're listening to us on someone else's computer or what have you, may even be listening to us on the radio if someone next door's got their computer on and listening to us via one of your MP3 transmitters, or pocket pirates as they call them. Either which way, if you'd like to listen to us direct, you can find us at sail.to/radioresistance. That's sail.to/radioresistance. Anyway, hope to catch you tomorrow and on the big demo in London, or if not, hope to catch you on Thursday at the Chesterfield SWP meeting, or otherwise, catch you next weekend. Going to sign off now with the sound of... Dick Goffin. Again recorded at Born in 84 last Saturday at the Winding Wheel. This one's It's Not Just What You're Given. Ciao for now.
Share, but how much you can share. It's not the bank shit either, but close your Thank you, that's fine.